It's the Web Talk Guys World Radio Show. Thank you for listening, and my name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Dana over here on the other mic, lending a little bit of a female voice to the Web Talk Guys, which that's okay with me. I'm a guy, right, Rob?
Yes.
Together, we bring you the latest on what's happening on the internet and the web, the flip side of the internet.
In just a few short minutes, we're going to have a fellow tech news webcaster, and his name is Andy Abramson from KenRadio.com, on the phone to talk about a worrisome service restriction with his Cox cable modem service and how this change could be the first of many coming that could restrict your use of a high-speed cable modem connection.
The internet was built in such a way to be standards-based so everybody works the same way. Here's the big problem. I leave from my house with my laptop and I go to Starbucks. I have to change my settings to a different SMTP server back to my own. But what's worse is what happens if every cable company goes this way and I'm not using the same SMTP anymore? Does this mean my ability to just wander through with my PDA and jump online with a hotspot? I think there's more to this story than they're telling.
Then we'll speak with Nigel Hamilton. He's the CEO of London-based Turbo10.com. That's T-U-R-B-O and then the number 10. It's a deep-linking meta-search engine. And this meta-search engine's really different. It's not your run-of-the-mill site. These guys could really be onto something that could one day maybe even challenge the god Google and their dominance of net search. And what they're doing is giving us access to the complete data resource that's the internet.
Turbo 10, in one sentence, is a universal meta search engine. Unlike traditional meta search engines, where they search possibly 10, 12 engines, we have over 1,000 engines in our database, and it's growing all the time.
Rob, let's open our digital mailbag.
Yes, yes.
This week we printed off an email from the famous Danny Sullivan. He's the editor of SearchEngineWatch.com. He's on to something, Rob. Tell me what he said.
I actually asked him a question. Actually, I sent him an email this past week about Google's Dance, which is a shuffling of page results that have been going on at Google over the last couple of weeks, and how I've seen many sites on the internet drop in their page rank. That's kind of an unusual thing to happen, to go from a page rank 6 to a page rank 5. And what page rank is, for those that don't know what that is it's a gauge of how important that website is to Google and how many other reciprocal links there are coming back to the website. And it can be a real strong tool that Google uses to gauge how high you come up in the search engine results. This actual page rank can be tracked by downloading a toolbar right into your browser. But anyway, Danny told me that the major change that's happening that may have created this page rank drop is that Google may be being smarter about how they allocate scores for external links. Those are links that are out there on the internet that are linking to your site. For a long time, they were actually pretty generic on how they rated those. So he's thinking that there's a lot smarter indexing being given right now. And those links out there that you may have on like maybe link farms or other directory type sites may be discounted now more than they were in the past. So his comment back was to ignore PageRank because it's really not important and just gauge what your traffic is to your website. That's really the most important aspect of this. And we're actually going to have Danny on the show here sometime in July to actually talk about this whole issue so we can really get into a lot of detail. Because this is pretty important to a lot of webmasters out there on getting indexed in Google and getting traffic from it.
And if I can just throw something in, I got an email today from Dan Park in Texas. He's been listening to us all for 5 years that we've been doing this, but he also threw into the mix Google-watch.com. And there, if you're into a little bit of conspiracy theory and chit-chat, they have totally dissected this whole Google thing that's been going on for the last 30 days or so, or actually longer, I think. We're seeing some stuff, particularly in the month of June. It's kind of compelling reading. It sometimes gets fairly technical.
And it's hard to understand sometimes.
Part of it is that they're approaching probably 4 billion pages indexed, and they assign an ID to each page. They think, and a lot of this is conjecture because Google's not talking.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a problem when they reach 4.2 billion pages because of some having to rewrite some kind of code. I'm not reading it right, but go to google-watch.com and you'll get just caught up in the whole conspiracy of it. Hey, if you guys heard any other news or trends that you want to share with us or favorite sites, please email us at dana@webtalkguys.com or robg@webtalkguys.com, and we'll do our best to get your thoughts on the air.
And also, we wanted to give you a reminder that WebTalk Guys is available for on-demand listening anytime as a downloadable MP3 or Windows Media file format. Just go to WebTalkGuys.com and you can have it for your pocket PC or your little MP3 player.
I do want to take a moment to say thanks to our sponsors. Please check out the bottom of our page on the website. You'll see a list of a whole bunch of sponsors. Go visit them. Go check out Compass Communications at ccom.net and paybycheck.com too.
On the phone, we have Andy Abramson, who is a tech news webcaster for KenRadio.com, and he co-hosts a daily show with Ken Rakowski. Their show is a very unusual but fascinating show about the global technology trends, and Andy, Ken, Dana, and I go way back and work very closely with them through the years with the WebTalk Guys show. We were actually broadcasting together off the same website. And the reason Andy's on the phone with us is he has started to notice a worrisome service restriction with his Cox cable modem service, and how this change could be the first of many coming use restrictions that could affect how all of us use our high-speed cable connection. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rob. Good to be on here again.
I was listening to your show the last couple of days, and you've been mentioning quite a bit about a little change that's happened with Cox and their cable modem service, and wanted to have you on the show to kind of talk a little bit about that and go into a little more detail. And it sounds like what they're doing is they're kind of restricting some access to some ports that may impact people on their network that want to send emails. And why don't you tell us a bit about that and what you found out?
Well, the whole thing here is Cox Communications is a network that provides broadband cable connectivity to, you know, millions of households around the United States. It's one of the two or three largest cable ISPs, cable modem ISPs. Made the conscious decision this month to block port 25. Now, most people like me have to find an internet engineer to understand what port 25
yeah,
is.
Yeah, exactly. Most
I mean,
people
I might
don't know.
Cover
yeah.
the, I might understand the business of the internet, but you start getting into knobs and switches and dips and plugs and ports and that, I got to find an expert. So somebody told me that port 25 deals with SMTP, and yeah. a lot of times people will put an SMTP server in their house, and they'll have people coming in and using it to send out. Well, I don't have one of those. I just basically have my trusty couple of laptops and my desktop, and I use Cox as my network, and I just want them to connect me to the internet. Mm-hmm. I don't want to use their mail server. I don't want to use their mailbox. I have my own servers at Ken Radio. We have our own SMTP server that sits in a server hosting facility. I have my own business email that this little tiny ISP MSP company called Yahoo, maybe you've heard of them.
Yeah, small company.
They have this business services thing that's real reliable. And then for my wine scene site, I actually host with Vario, another little nondescript company, which is owned by NTT, which I think has a market cap that'll, you know, really make Cox seem pretty small. Well, lo and behold, one night I couldn't send any email out, and I thought there was something wrong. Maybe Microsoft had screwed up with an update. No, it wasn't them. Maybe I did something. No, it wasn't me. So I went in and checked the Cox email account that I never, ever, ever check using webmail, and lo and behold, they sent out a note saying, starting June 19th, they mailed us out on the 17th, they're going to block port 25 in both directions because of viruses and spam. Hmm. Well, I don't have any viruses. I run Norton. I don't send out spam. I'm real careful about checking the, you know, emails that come in. I don't have any payloads. So I don't know why I was being affected, so I tried to do a little bit of homework and find out.
They picked on the wrong guy, the guy with this national radio show.
Well, they did, and they're so good. They actually, you know, called me back. A couple people have called me back, and another person is supposed to call me back.
We have Andy Abramson on the phone right now. Andy's calling in from KenRadio.com, where he's co-host on a daily talk show. He's telling us about Cox Communications and what they've done to make his life a little more difficult. We'll find out what Cox had to say for themselves when we come back after this. More with Andy in a moment. This is Web Talk Guys Radio. Do you offer presentations to groups of people and would like a way to reach a bigger audience without being there in person? The WebTalk Guys streaming video production services can help you create engaging, rich media streaming presentations viewable on demand on the web. We can video your program, include music, titles, images, even PowerPoint slides and embedded hyperlinks so that you can show your professional presentation to the world. We can even offer you a return on investment by setting up a way you can accept payment from your audience in return for watching your presentations on the web. Your package price includes digital recording at your location in the Seattle-Tacoma area and full post-production, all for just $299. We also provide webcast hosting of your video and many other options for a small additional fee. Hey, even put your entire presentation on a business card CD. It's a great marketing tool. Want to see what I'm talking about? Hop on the web and click on over to WebTalkGuys.com and click on the WebTalk Guys video production and streaming services link at the top of our page. You can then watch a 45-minute example of what we can do for you, as well as watch the video on growing your business in these recessionary times from the Washington State University Small Business Development Center. Contact the WebTalkGuys streaming video production services online at WebTalkGuys.com. Email us at info@WebTalkGuys.com or call us at area code 253-566-9356.
You're still connected to the WebTalkGuys radio show. I'm Rob Greenlee and Webgirl Dana's here.
We have Andy Abramson on the line. Andy's co-host of KIN Radio, 5 day a week tech news and commentary show. You can get at kinradio.com. Andy's explaining some of the troubles he's had with his internet service provider once the big cable company decided to shut off one of the ports. Andy, you mentioned you talked to Cox Communications. What did they have to say for themselves?
They said that the reason for it is 89% of the traffic that goes over port 25, according to their abuse team, is either virus or spam. And I said, what's the other 11%? They said, oh, that's legitimate email. And I said, okay, so like I said today to one of their business development executives, I said, so the 11% of the public, which is smart, is being asked to pay more for the idiocy of the ignorant or the ones that choose to abuse the network.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing. So the second reason they told me was that they're ending up on these things known as blacklists or block lists, mm-hmm. which, as we all know, are another way that people prevent spam. But here's the problem. The blacklist or block list, there is no way to really get on or get off in an authoritative manner. If somebody decides to put you on because they don't like the web talk guys, it's going to take you more energy than it's worth to try and get off. You're better off just telling your listener to say, get another email address with a different provider and we'll send it to you, deliver a newsletter or an email.
That whole area is very unregulated right now, and anybody can jump into there and create blacklists, right? And
anybody can create their blacklist. And so when you look at that, you think, well, how do they get on there and how do they get off? Well, I went and ran some checks. I can't find Cox anywhere on the blacklist. And their fear was they were getting told by ISPs like supposedly AOL that if you don't start doing something to prevent spam, we're going to stop accepting mail from you. Well, hold it. Who is AOL to say you better not send us spam? Which for years, the single largest open relay in the history of the internet
was AOL.
Was AOL. Yeah, followed by who? Hotmail.
Yeah, exactly.
Followed by who? Yahoo. I mean, let's face it. There isn't even assurances that it really was coming from a Cox server. And I've talked to people at Vario, and they have a whole different approach. They try and work through the problem. They don't try and, you know, just say, we're going to turn off this port. So that's the second thing that has me concerned, that where's their valid evidence? Now let's go a little deeper. Let's go to the fact that they have a business service package for $89 a month,
mm-hmm.
which, if you want to pay the extra roughly $40 or $50, depending whether you rent a modem or bring your own modem, you can use port 25. You can even have a server in your home office.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that kind of blows a big hole in the theory that they don't want spam going over their network. Now, Rob, Dana, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
You think $40 a month is really going to stop a spammer?
No way.
No, I don't think so. Well, and it sounds like it's all about dollars and cents to these ISPs.
When you talk about spam or you talk about viruses, those are two topics that are so high in the public's mind of people who are connected to the internet that it would kind of slip by or skate by.
Well, that's a justification for taking some action.
Well, that's a justification for taking some action. But their response is, we really haven't had that many inquiries from the press or that many customers expressing they're upset. Mm-hmm. And I said, you're missing the point. That 11% of the public that was using your network to send over legitimate traffic passed through SMTP servers to pass over port 25 to reach their distant SMTP server are the people who you're asking to pay. They're asking to have the smarter, wiser, safer people be inconvenienced by everybody else.
Yeah.
Because if everybody else doesn't know how to protect their system from viruses and doesn't know how to release payloads that impregnate other systems, well, then let the people who know how to not do it pay the bill.
Well, Andy, let's talk a little bit about, in the last minute or two, this change, and is it a sign of some major changes that are coming? And that's what really sparked my interest and what wanted to have you on the show was, you know, I see these ISPs, these cable modem providers, really being the gateway to internet access in the future. Are they going to start locking down what we can get to and use that as a value proposition to drive their profits up? And then also, is that potentially, you think, going to lead into restriction of content access?
Well, that's the big concern. I mean, I know talking to some of our friends at Microsoft who sponsor the World Technology Roundup on Ken Radio every day, that they're concerned, like we are, about port blocking. That would impact, you know, shows like Web Talk Guys as well as us. We're all concerned that the cable companies might try and become the ferryman and the gatekeeper at the same time. But what about they block other services? What if they start blocking the ability to do an FTP upload?
Exactly.
What about they lock down the ability to do Telnet because they view that Telnet's unsafe? I mean, imagine if I drop a file off onto the UCSD servers here in San Diego unknowingly, and it's a virus, and it came and it's linked to the Cox network. Does that mean Cox is going to react and shut down the FTP sites or the FTP port? That's where they're going. And does this impact things like voice over IP? Does it impact any new technologies that might be coming out? The internet was built in such a way to be standards-based so everybody works the same way. Unfortunately, a lot of people try and deviate from a standard without looking at all the other solutions. In the case of spam blocking, there's too many other technologies, and that could be a whole other discussion that could actually be used by Cox and other ISPs. But here's the big problem. I leave from my house with my laptop and I go to Starbucks. I have to change my settings to a different SMTP server back to my own. But what's worse is what happens if every cable company goes this way, and I start going from people's houses to people's houses here along the coast from three different cable companies, Time Warner, Cox, Adelphia, and I'm not using the same SMTP anymore. Does this mean my ability to just wander through with my PDA and jump online with a hotspot? I think there's more to the story than they're telling.
And there really aren't that many cable modem providers out there. The cable
there's about five
providers.
Big ones, really. Yeah. There's Cox, Time Warner, you got OptOnline, you got Cablevision, you got Charter, you got Time Warner, you got Comcast. Was that five or six?
Yeah, but most of them have a market, and they basically dominate that market. So it isn't like you have in one market you've got two or three options to maintain
well,
a competitive
in San Diego County, we have two major carriers, Time Warner and Cox. And you know, if you live on a bordering area, and you've got friends in different cable companies, but yet you want to go from house to house with your laptop, your PDA, and everybody's running a wireless network and hosting their own mail someplace else, it would be great because you can get it. But, like, Cox doesn't even give you the ability to get your mail remotely anymore unless you go through webmail. I think they're taking one step back, and actually there's another company behind all this, but we'll talk about that some other time.
Okay.
Also, tell us all about Ken Radio and what you have up your sleeve and how much you enjoy doing that. Give us
a
plug for Ken.
Ken and I have been broadcasting every day since 1998. Ken was the original webcast news guy since 1994. We do a daily half-hour, 30-minute show where we get to tell you what we think. And quite honestly, it's our show, and the news is just a sideline. We have fun with it, and we find 9 stories a day. We read a listener letter. But we give people an insight to the news a little differently in a more predictive analytical fashion. And the funny thing is, we're right. And our listeners keep reminding us how we're right. You see, being a marketing guy and Ken being a technology guy, we kind of know what's really going on, and we can see through the smoke screens that the PR people put a spin on. And having been a PR person since I'm 14, it's hard to spin us because we know when we're being spun.
Well, and it's definitely unusual what you guys are doing, and having an open internet like this enables guys like you to exist, where normally you wouldn't have anybody like you.
Oh, I'm sure, Max, that, you know, if this keeps up, Cox is going to block port something or other so people can't listen to Windows Media or The Real Player, and, you know, unless we pay him a big honking fee.
BlockKenRadio.com.
That's what the Chinese are doing, you know. Yeah. The Chinese try and do it, but yet everybody finds a way to stay connected.
That's what I'm hoping anyway, and that's the big reason why I wanted to have you on, was to talk about, because I think it's a really important issue, what's going on here.
So. And the best way to stay connected to Ken Radio is by going to what? KenRadio.com, signing up for the newsletter?
www.KenRadio.com. Actually, the best way is to get on the newsletter is to send Ken at KenRadio.com a note. But if you want to know what I think, it's Andy at KenRadio.com.
And you can still get that email.
Yeah, Andy at KenRadio.com or Ken at KenRadio.com.
Gotcha.
Okay. Well, Andy, it was great having you call in.
My pleasure, Rob. Good talking to you too, Dana.
Well, Andy, you take care.
I appreciate it, Rob. You too.
Hang with us in a moment. Right after the break, we'll be speaking with, direct from London, Nigel Hamilton. He's the CEO of Turbo10.com. It's a meta search engine that will really be giving Google a challenge over the next few years, and he's going to tell us a little bit about this wonderful deep linking search engine. This is Web Talk Eyes Radio.
Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of WebTalkGuys Radio. I have a tip for you that will cut your inbox spam down to zero, guaranteed. The solution is a very powerful software plugin called MailWiper, and it cleaned my inbox of all my hundreds of unwanted emails and continues to do so every day, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. MailWiper currently works with Outlook and Outlook Express for Microsoft and supports multiple email accounts. Definitely stop deleting emails. Do your part to fight spam. MailWiper can be downloaded and installed in seconds and set up within a half an hour. There is no monthly fee or annual fees ever. Get your life back. I did. Go to MailWiper.com now and save over 40% off the regular $49.95 price. Get MailWiper now for $29.95 by visiting MailWiper.com. MailWiper comes with a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee and free technical support. Remember, save 40% now off of the regular $49.95 price by going to MailWiper.com right now. This is WebTalkGuys Radio, and my name is Rob Greenlee.
Webgirl Dana over on this side, and thank you very much for listening and rejoining us after the break. Be sure to check out the site at WebTalkGuys.com. One of our most popular topics we've had on the show the last 4.5 years has been search engines, because those are really your guide to the internet, just like we are.
That's right, and lots of people like to find out about that. So on the line joining the WebTalkGuys right now is Nigel Hamilton, who's the CEO of Turbo10.com. And what Turbo10 is a London-based meta search engine that could give Google a challenge over the next few years. And they're going to give us a glimpse into a whole new way of searching for things on the net. Their search engine, Turbo10, is what is called a deep linking search engine. Nigel, thanks for joining us from London.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Why don't you tell us a larger view of what Turbo10.com is? Now, we've mentioned in the lead-in here that this is a new kind of deep linking search engine, but why don't you give us kind of your perspective on it?
Okay, well, Turbo10, in one sentence, is a universal meta search engine. Unlike traditional meta search engines, where they search possibly 10, 12 engines, we have over 1,000 engines in our database, and it's growing all the time.
Wow, that's terrific. Now, what makes this type of search, and why is it so important to have 1,000 or more search engines that are a part of your meta search?
Well, there's some search engine experts, Chris Sherman and Gary Price. They recently published a book called The Invisible Web. And in that book, they find that there's over 500 times the currently accessible web that's hidden in smaller topic-specific search engines. And so they've called this the invisible web because it's invisible to search engines like Google and Yahoo, for example. But we actually think this is now a bit of a misnomer, because we have developed technology that can connect to these engines. So we feel that we've solved the problem of connecting to the invisible web. So we're not calling it invisible anymore. We're saying that it's now the deep net, because it's the deep resources, which aren't necessarily accessible by Google and Yahoo and other traditional crawler-based engines, but they're the more specific content that you might find, for example, in legal search engines, sporting search engines. I mean, any search engine you care to name, they're out there on the web. And at the moment, we've got over 1,000 in our database, but it's growing all the time. We expect it to grow to many thousands more.
This large group of search engines, what type of sites are they? Are they just websites that have internal website search, or are they specific search engines like a Google or something like that, but it's more of very specific to a particular topic? What does that search engine look like?
Yes, well, that's a really good question. There's a whole myriad of different types, and just to give you a couple of examples. For example, the U.S. Patents database is a huge resource of patents and other things that's available. And each country has its own patents database. So it would be useful for some people to search across all the patent databases. Mm-hmm. And our service enables you to do that. But that's just one example. There are other different types of engines that that we connect to. And the resource is valuable because the only way that you could otherwise get to that information would be to search on the specific site. Here what we're doing is we're being able to access that information, you know, from wherever it is across the planet.
Nigel, if you don't mind, just give us a little visual glimpse on what it would look like if one of our listeners went to Turbo and typed in a search term. What would they see? Give us an example.
We don't want to overwhelm our users, so when they first come to Turbo 10, the search box will look very similar to what they would normally expect on a search engine. However, there's a pick list on the front page, and what they can do is there's a link below it, which is a My Collections link. And if they click on that link, they'll then be taken to another page where all our 1,000-plus search engines are listed, and they can then choose to make their own collections from the engines that we've connected to.
So it's kind of like a ladder of in-depth information that you just have to explore down this road or that road and get more results. But a lot of the results may be similar. They're going to go to the same sites, maybe in the top results, right?
Yeah, that's right. So some sites return similar results. So our engine merges those results into one so they're not repeated when it arrives in the result listing. We don't want to, have too many repeats at all, so that's part of the process as well.
Okay.
We remove repeats.
Yeah, it says on your site that you can have up to 10, I guess, in your own collection. Are you guys planning on expanding that into more than just 10?
Okay, so we've got over 1,000 in our kind of pool of available engines, and that really is an industry first. There's no other meta search engine out there that has that number of engines in its database.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what you can do is create as many collections as you like, containing up to 10 engines per collection. So, you could have 10, 12, 15 collections. For example, you had 10 collections, then you could connect to 100 engines. We have an extra feature where we don't actually want everyone to have to go and select the engines. That's really for, very advanced researchers, advanced users who have specific engines in mind that they want to use. There's a whole group of searchers out there that really, aren't too bothered about going that extra step and creating those collections. So for those users, we will attempt to select the most appropriate engines from our database when they type in the query.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been a real problem for computer scientists over the past, 5 years. Everyone's been working on a way of solving this problem. It's called the database source selection problem. And here again, we feel we've come up with a good solution to it.
Mm-hmm. A person can go to this site and add their search engine, too. What's the process for a site out there that's got a vast database to link up with you guys?
Okay, well, actually, we get a lot of inquiries about this. A lot of people want, actually, their engine to be connected to us. The way to do it is to come to the site, turbo10.com, and click on the Add Search Engine link. From there, all you need to do is enter the URL of the search box of your engine, and then we'll take it from there. We have an automated process which automatically goes and locates the engine's search box. From there, it tries to create an adapter to connect to that search box. And then once we have an adapter, then we can fully connect the engine.
Why don't you tell us the history of TurboTen? Now, you guys have been around for a couple of years now, but it seems like you guys are starting to get known out there because of some recent media press that you've got here locally in the United States. What's the history and who actually started it?
We've been in business for about 3 years, and we've been really in research and development mode for the first two. Mm-hmm. So it's really been only in the last kind of six months, really, that our technology has really gone into kind of production and has really, you know, gone out to the world. And just recently, our research has been featured in the WW conference that was in Budapest. And since then, a lot of excitement has built about the technology. And that's why I think, you know, the media interest also came about as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, with media interest and attention, you're also now on the radar of Google and MetaCrawler. And I'm just curious, is it a competitive industry, or what have you heard from your fellow search engines?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. Yes, I think the short answer is yes, it's a very competitive industry. And I think one of the things that Google showed was that even though that they entered late into the market, considering that Yahoo and AltaVista were well established, They were quickly able to gain a majority position. And I think that's because simply they offered, you know, a quality service. And that's been our goal from the start as well, to offer a quality search engine tool, because we think that if we do that, then, our business will flourish.
Nigel, what's your background? We talked about the history of TurboTen, but, you know, were you in the tech industry in some capacity before launching this?
Yes, I'm Australian, you can probably tell from my accent, but I worked in Sydney as a university lecturer in the School of Computing Sciences at the University of Technology, Sydney. That was where I kind of picked up the technical kind of knowledge and education to go on and do something like this.
So what features does the search engine have right now that you would consider to be kind of leading edge right now? And I know that there's some things that have been kind of put on hold because of the amount of traffic that you guys have. But what's on the docket? What's new? What's coming down the horizon here that searchers can look forward to when they go to your site?
Well, the deep net is the first thing. That they'll start to see that our engine is doing things that no other engine is doing. And they'll see that they're getting results from engines which they may have never heard of. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing for the engines which, you know, have been quietly working away in the background, because it gives them a chance to actually appear on the world stage too. Google, for example, I think has a policy that they actually want you to get off their site as soon as possible for you to arrive at your destination. Mm-hmm. We've got a slightly different philosophy. We think that searching is also about browsing and finding the result. And often you just don't get exactly to the result you want. We're going to be using a lot more kind of technology, a lot more personalization to make sure that we match the query. And then we don't just kind of drop the user off at the site. We actually do extra things to make finding what they need to find easier.
Mm-hmm. We are in the middle of a conversation with Nigel Hamilton. Nigel's CEO of TurboTen.com, the London-based meta search engine. More in a moment. This is Web Talk Eyes Radio.
It's Web Talk Eyes Radio. My name is Rob Greenlee.
And this is Web Girl Dana. And on the line with us is Nigel Hamilton, the CEO of London-based TurboTen, giving us some information about his meta search engine.
I saw on your site that you guys are clustering, which is, I guess, a term to describe the search results are grouped by a keyword that's displayed on the side of the browser window. What's the thought behind that?
Part of our philosophy is that we want people to browse faster. Because one of the problems is that, yes, okay, it's one thing to get the search results back quickly, but we want people to be able to process a large number of results so they can quickly browse through. And we've done just a couple of interface things to make that easy. The first is that we've displayed all 10 results on the page. We do this so that people don't have to scroll down the page because, that can take up time just, you know, scrolling up and down the whole time. The next thing we've done is when we merge the results from all the engines together, we also create topic clusters surrounding, you know, particular topics. So, for example, if you were to search on salsa, you know, well, what is the searcher talking about? Are they talking about recipes for a salsa recipe, or are they talking about dancing? Well, our clustering algorithm enables us to pick out which salsa, you know, the person was talking about. They can choose either recipes or dance, and then they will quickly be taken to that portion of the results which pertain to that topic.
Yeah, and I know that that clustering concept has been around in some of the other search engines for a long time, but it looked like you guys are really doing something different with it, because you actually have a pretty extensive list of keywords when it comes up, and that was surprising to me.
Yeah. Well, I think for a meta search engine, I think clustering is important because results are coming from, you know, potentially completely disparate engines, and so clustering is a way of bringing cohesion together in the results, and it's just a way of ordering the results a bit more kind of intelligently for the user. Some of our competitors, you know, make a lot about clustering, and you know, it's a large part of their engine. But we didn't want to make the navigation of clustering, you know, the actual problem of searching through clusters then takes up a lot of time. So we didn't want to make the cluster list too long, such that it actually got in the way of people finding the result.
Yeah. Now, with traffic comes, you know, a lot of pull on your servers. What's going on that side of your picture? Are you guys having to add servers all the time and expanding out your hardware network as well as people find you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And 2 weeks ago, we came under an extreme amount of load, and our internet service provider actually thought that we were under some sort of denial of service attack.
No, you're just popular now, I guess.
Yeah, it was quite furious. But since then, definitely, we've been putting things in place so that we can scale up more or less gracefully. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, it is a major technical challenge to do that. So, you know, we certainly have a lot of respect for the bigger search engines who, you know, have obviously been able to take on a lot of traffic and handle it gracefully. So we're learning fast about traffic and having to scale up.
Yeah. Well, so are you guys going to get involved in sponsored links or anything like that as a possible revenue source? Because I didn't really notice that too much on your site at this point.
Yes, sponsored links is part of our revenue model. But at this time, we're also open to angel investment, and we're also open to actually licensing our technology as well.
Oh,
and
okay.
A number of companies have approached us about licensing our technology. So I suppose we see our revenue opportunities as being a combination of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, you know, we really are quite open-minded.
Mm-hmm. What's your plan over the next 2 years? Do you see yourself getting up there with the Googles of the world and really being a competitive force in the search engine area? I mean, it sounds like you've got a terrific product.
Well, we really do. And, I mean, we've just got so many ideas. And it's just, in a way, it's just a question of resource for us to basically bring these ideas into fruition. So, I mean, we really hope to get there. We've certainly got, you know, enough ideas to get there, that's for sure. So now we just have to, you know, make sure that we can scale up gracefully and that our resources, you know, match the requirements of being a, you know, a top search engine. So, I mean, we hope to get there, and I suppose the next year, 2 years, we'll see.
So are you concerned that a Google out there might take some of your techniques and apply them to their search engine and kind of take you guys out of the market? Do you have a concern about that? It seems like you guys are different enough as far as your path that you're taking that may not be the case, but what's your thoughts on that?
That is a concern. However, the way our system works, the adaption process of connecting to other engines, it's a fairly intimate process.
Oh, sure.
And it's very difficult for, you know, other engines to come along and do that. You know, at some point, the target engines will just say, well, look, you know, I don't want to be connected to all these different engines. So, I mean, we are the first mover in this market, and,
mm-hmm.
You know, it will take quite a while for our competitors to catch up. But that said, they have the resources to catch up.
Sure.
So we need to be, a step ahead. But fortunately, we've got enough ideas and the agility, actually, to make the ideas a reality,
mm-hmm.
That we think we're actually going to stay ahead of the game. But at the same time, we want to, you know, take a whole group of users with us so that they grow with the use of the system as well, because our users are a great source of feedback.
One of the things about being a meta search engine, and we've covered kind of meta search a little bit on our show in the past, is that you're relying on other people's search engines to get your results. And is there any concern that you guys have that over time that those search engines may try and lock you guys out from pulling results?
That's definitely possible, although enter into agreements with other search engines to take their sponsored links.
Oh, okay.
So, in a way, a lot of engines are knocking on our door to say, you know, please take our results.
Sure. Well, that's the way you want it, right?
Yeah, which is fine with us. So, in a way, you know, I think we can kind of agree to get along.
Yeah, it certainly seems that the whole search area is becoming more and more competitive right now, with the Microsoft wanting to develop their own technology and the separations now between Google and Yahoo, and it just seems like it's really starting to heat up out there, and it's all because of Google's success, I think. And are you guys hoping that you can kind of, you know, ride on the coattails of that expansion?
Definitely. And I think it's also a recognition that search engines have now really matured to the point where they really have to offer a bit more to the user. The average internet searcher is becoming more and more sophisticated.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
true.
They expect more from the search engine. You know, it's up to the search engines to really meet that challenge. We'll be doing much more personalization so that TurboTen will be aware about particular users and will know their history and will know, based on that history, what they may be looking for. And this is a whole area of search which really hasn't been dealt with by the major players. So we're very excited about what we can do there.
So is there any limitations to your current technology of being able to plug into a particular search engine? You know, one of the areas that we have the most following as far as search engine goes would be in the multimedia search area. Does your search engine have any issues with that type of search result at this point, like a singingfish.com type of a search engine?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, we've built our system so that it can connect to, for example, peer-to-peer systems as well. So I think that's the other important thing to think of, is that it's not actually just web-based search anymore. It can be peer-to-peer-based systems as well, and also including what you're saying there as well with multimedia systems. Our system does rely on, we do some probing to probe inside other engines to distill their contents. And
that's a nice way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I haven't seen the multimedia engine you're speaking of, but provided there is enough kind of keyword context that describes the multimedia object inside the database, then it could do a reasonable job of indexing the engine. But it's very difficult to create a search engine to search a sound or a picture.
Sure. Well, that's kind of their challenge.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, actually diving into the content and trying to pull data out of it somehow. But yeah, that's true. Nigel, it was terrific having you on the show with us.
Thanks for having me.
Telling us all about TurboTen, and we think you guys have a terrific product going on there, and we're going to be following you real close, and we hope to have you back on again to give us an update.
Great. Okay. Thanks a lot.
This is Web.Guys Radio. And that's it for this week. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to having you back listening with us next week.
See you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.